This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. As many Vermonters were wrapping up work late Friday afternoon, a shocking scene unfolded in downtown Barrie. Lara Sobel, a social worker with the Department for Children and Families, was shot and killed, allegedly by a client. The next day, three more murders were discovered in nearby Berlin, and those victims are relatives of Sobel's accused murderer, Jody Herring. This is a disturbing set of circumstances that Vermonters have been coming to terms with all weekend. Today on Vermont Edition, we want to give you a space to connect with your neighbors, voice your concerns and reactions, and ask questions, though we know that we may not have answers for many of the questions we're all asking. You can join us today by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can join the discussion on VPR's Facebook page. You can also, of course, always email your thoughts to vermontedition@vpr.net. VPR reporter Taylor Dobbs joins us now from the Vermont Superior Court in Barrie, where Jody Herring will be arraigned today on murder charges. Hi, Taylor. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane.
You covered this story throughout the weekend, so let's go back to early Friday evening, and maybe you could just tell us what occurred at the City Place office complex in downtown Barrie.
So authorities say that as Lara Sobel was leaving work on Friday, Jody Herring came out in the parking lot and shot her twice with a hunting rifle, killing her. Herring was allegedly tackled by witnesses who kept her in place until the police came and arrested her.
Okay, so that was Friday evening. What do we know about the accused suspect, Jody Herring?
She's the mother of a 9-year-old child who apparently was taken from her by the state in July. And as a result of that, she was very upset and apparently killed the social worker involved with that case.
And that social worker was, of course, Lara Sobel.
That's correct.
News of Sobel's murder was just starting to grip the community, starting to ripple through when three more murders were discovered in the next-door town of Berlin on Saturday morning. Who are those victims, Taylor, and how are they connected to Jody Herring?
So those victims are all related to Jody Herring. Rhonda Herring and Regina Herring are Jody Herring's cousins, and their mother, Julianne Falzerano, is Jody's aunt.
There was a lot of community response over the weekend. How have people been reacting to this situation, Taylor?
Well, there's been a lot of shock. Of course, on Friday, everyone was shocked by the news of Lara Sobel's death, Lara Sobel's death, that is. And then on Saturday morning, it just seemed almost impossible that this could be getting this much worse, and those three deaths appear to be connected to Sobel's death, and it's not expected that Herring will be charged today in connection with those murders, but authorities do believe the cases are connected.
Can you go any further than that? What are the details about how they feel that they're connected?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Can you go deeper than that? I mean, Jody Herring is expected to be arraigned only in the case of Lara Sobel, but what are you hearing about how they are connected? And what's the question about what can and cannot be said about that?
So the investigation is still ongoing, of course, but authorities say that they believe Herring killed the three relatives and then went to the DCF offices on Friday and killed Sobel. So they think that they're all connected to this loss of custody case. And the charges today are going to be first-degree murder in the case of Lara Sobel.
I'm talking right now with VPR's Taylor Dobbs. He's at the Superior Courthouse in Barrie awaiting the arraignment here in the noon hour of Jody Herring, suspected in the killing of four people, but expected only to be arraigned in the killing of Lara Sobel, the DCF worker who was killed on Friday evening. Taylor, there was a lot going on this weekend, two vigils. We've had a lot of comments from state leaders, from the mayor of Barrie and others. Have you heard anything from state workers today or other workers at DCF about how they're feeling as they return to work this Monday?
Governor Peter Shumlin stepped out of the office building where Sobel used to work about an hour ago, and he said he spoke with state workers, and they're feeling obviously very sad and devastated at the loss of a coworker. But someone also said that the narrative around DCS has become very toxic in the past months, with people accusing DCF of kidnapping children, and he emphasized that this is very difficult work that they're doing. They're doing the best they can to work in very difficult circumstances to make sure children are safe. And he said that Vermonters need to do a better job of supporting them by not allowing this dialogue of intense criticism and harsh words towards DCF caseworkers.
What's happening at the courthouse in the noon hour there right now?
Well, there's a steady stream of people coming through security. A lot of press is here for the arraignment, and a lot of people asking for the affidavit, which is being filed today in connection with the Sobel case. But it's unclear at this point how much authorities are going to disclose about the three Berlin murders today, because it's only in connection with the Sobel death and not those three murders.
And I should say we're trying to get a copy of that affidavit as well ourselves. And if we do, we will be updating you at the end of the hour on what is said in that affidavit. Taylor Dobbs, maybe you could just, before we let you go, remind us and help us understand why Attorney General Bill Sorrell's office will be prosecuting this case instead of the Washington State's attorney.
The Washington County State's attorney apparently was a witness to what happened on Friday evening in Barrie. He saw or heard Sobel get shot, so he recused himself. Sorrell said on Saturday that prosecutor couldn't ethically take part, so Sorrell's office is going to handle the prosecution in this case.
That's VPR's Taylor Dobbs at the Vermont Superior Court in Barrie as we broadcast live in the noon hour. The arraignment for Jody Herring, suspected in the killings of four people over the weekend, is scheduled to start at 1 p.m. She's expected to be arraigned for the murder of Lara Sobel, the DCF worker. Taylor, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And we are getting updated on all the details of what is currently known. We also want to provide a space for questions, concerns, a way for Vermonters to talk about what they're thinking. And as we continue to see this case develop and the situation around it be better understood in the coming days and weeks, we'd like to hear what questions you have and what you'd like answered or discussed here on Vermont Edition. You can send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. We're going to be spending the rest of the hour with Ken Schatz. He's the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. So if you have a question for him, again, our number, 1-800-639-2211. Commissioner Schatz is in our Montpelier studio this hour. Thank you very much for making the time to talk with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Are there any details that you could share with us or add here that we've been hearing from Taylor Dobbs?
I think what I would really lead in with reiterating and appreciating the governor's comments and the similar comments from the Secretary of Agency of Human Services, Hal Cohn, that this is a really difficult time. We do all need to come together to support each other. But I also want to specifically say we need to support our social workers. We ask them to do an incredibly challenging task. They're professional, they're dedicated, they're committed. Every day they take on incredibly challenging situations involving children and families. They do their best to protect children and to work through those situations in a respectful manner. And in due course, they deserve respect. We have certainly seen and been concerned by some of the hateful and hurtful comments on internet and blogs and other social media. We really want to urge people to come together to not allow that kind of behavior to go unresponded to. And we need the community to step forward in Lara's memory and respect the social workers. They're doing a task that we ask them as a community to do, to protect our children.
Let me play the comment that Governor Peter Shumlin made this morning after spending some time with the staff who work in the Barrie DCF office. He stepped out and spoke with reporters after that meeting and is reiterating some of what Commissioner Schatz has been saying. So let's just hear the comments of the governor, and then I'm going to ask you for a little bit more detail on what you're specifically talking about, Commissioner. Here's the governor.
They're feeling very much like their hard work is not appreciated. Having said that, it's my judgment as governor that the dialogue about DCF workers and state employees has sunk to a level that we have not seen before, that I believe feeds their fear about the work that they do. If you folks constantly misrepresenting the work that you do, telling folks that you're kidnapping kids, that you're trying to destroy families, that everything you do is based in incompetence, when these are extraordinarily competent, good, dedicated people like Lara, you come to work every day with reasonable fears about your safety. So let's, as Vermonters, use this opportunity, seize this opportunity, do what Vermonters do best, and take the lesson from this that we all have a responsibility to say no. Speaking about, writing about, commenting about our state workers in this way is not okay. It must stop, and we are going to tell the other side of the story.
That's Governor Peter Shumlin this morning. We're talking with Commissioner of the Department for Children and Families, Ken Schatz. Ken Schatz, where are these comments coming from, and what are the specific concerns?
The comments are coming from individuals who are posting comments in the comments sections regarding some of the newspaper or other blog posts. The concern is that, first of all, that they indicate a lack of understanding and respect for the role of social workers, that and moreover, that when you see these kind of hateful comments, it makes our social workers feel uncomfortable and insecure in terms of their safety, and we just need to recognize that and talk about how we can address that narrative so that we give social workers the respect that they deserve.
There seem to be two different things there. One is the respect that you say social workers deserve for the hard work they're doing, and the other is a question about safety and fear, and fear in their jobs. Are you saying that these comments that are often posted online, often in response to news stories, certainly before Lara Sobel's death in addition to now, are you saying that those comments are an actual threat to social workers in some way or create a climate that could lead to safety concerns?
You know, I'm not an expert in terms of exactly what the implications of those comments are, but I can tell you, just as I think anybody, if you are involved in this work and you see comments like that, it upsets you. It makes you uncomfortable. It makes you feel that you never quite know what the next step might be. Is there something that might happen beyond the posting of that kind of comment? But is there obviously this is an isolated, horrific incident. That is at least how we're looking at it. We believe that there's not necessarily any reason for broad, general fear of others taking some sort of violent action. But we need to be on our guard, too. And so to that end, we're certainly reviewing all our security protocols and to make sure that we are providing appropriate protection for our social workers.
We're going to talk about more safety questions in a little while. So if you have questions about the safety of social workers and caseworkers at DCF, we're going to be looking at that broadly. We're going to be looking at it narrowly. We're talking with Ken Schatz. He's the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also put your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. We're going to be talking about what else we do from here, what the state needs to do, how DCF is thinking about this issue, and we'll take your comments and calls as we continue here all this hour on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition, and today we're joined by Ken Schatz, Commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Obviously, still reeling a little bit from the events of this past weekend, but we're talking about what happens next. We're talking about the atmosphere at the Department for Children and Families. Commissioner Schatz saying some of the comments that appear online need to change. There needs to be more respect for the work that caseworkers do. If you have a perspective on that, maybe you are a caseworker, maybe you've worked for DCF DCF or are a social worker involved in family affairs and would like to share your perspective. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Nancy, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Nancy. Your thoughts today.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi. It's very tragic what happened to Ms. Sobel, and there is no justification for it, but I do want to say that I myself have witnessed, and this is very rarely talked about, of abuse by some social workers and also foster care workers. And I know there's a great need for foster care people and social workers, and this is an issue that does exist. Most, I'm sure, are decent people trying to do a good job, but some truly do abuse the power given to them. And I always thought this is going to happen one day where someone is just going to do something. And I'm not saying Ms. Sobel did anything wrong, but I'm just saying that in general, this does happen. And back in the 1990s, there were protests in Burlington and on Montpelier to try to reform the system. A few legislators did see how bad things were. And children should only be in foster care when they truly need to be.
So, Nancy, let me ask you, let me stop you here for a second and ask you a question. What would you like to see now that this is, one might argue that DCF has been in the spotlight for more than a year now, but given the situation right now, what do you think, what good could come out of this? What would you like to see happen?
I believe what Senator Tom Baer tried to do and Representative Paul Knox back in the 1990s. I also spoke to Governor Howard Dean about the issue because I thought it was urgent. There should be retraining of social workers that they should deal with families in a very delicate, traumatic situation for both parents and children with respect for the family, as well as social workers needing to be respected because some truly are abusive to families.
Nancy, I hear where you're going, and I appreciate that comment, and I want to put it to Commissioner Schatz. Certainly, there may be questions about training and about how to deal in delicate situations. What about Nancy's concerns?
So I really want to separate out the violent behavior simply should not be tolerated by anybody in our community. Having said that, as I indicated, I do understand that child protection proceedings are incredibly complex and emotionally difficult for many people. And I certainly respect that there are different points of view in every single one of those cases. What we have as a system in Vermont, and we're constantly striving to improvement, most recently in the last legislative session, we do have a whole system of safeguards through the system in terms of a variety of people involved to protect the interests of the child, to be sure, but also of the parents, so that we have attorneys for parents. We have a court system that very carefully reviews these cases. In addition, let me say, I also appreciate the point that we're not all perfect. I make mistakes. What we have in place is, to the best of our ability, an openness to hear concerns, complaints, or grievances by people involved with our system. Anyone can contact the district director in their area if they feel that a social worker or a foster parent isn't treating them well or appropriately. I'm going to emphasize again, and I appreciate the caller saying it, that all of our people are incredibly committed and dedicated and do the best they can. But be that as it may, I understand that sometimes people have concerns and complaints, and they are welcome to convey that to our district director. And frankly, if they are not satisfied by the response, they can contact my office, the commissioner's office, and we look into every single complaint that comes to us.
Let's go to Lori, who's on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Lori. Go right ahead. Hi, Lori. You there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we gotcha.
Sorry about that. Hello, Commissioner Schatz. I've been working with the Department of Children and Families for the past 15 years as a defense attorney in juvenile court. And I think it's hard to say in such a short amount of time, but I think the problem is a global one in that there's a cultural schism between the people who are in the system as the clients of the DCF workers and the people who are the DCF workers. I've worked with The group that I have been working with most recently of DCF workers are phenomenal people who work incredibly long hours in incredibly thankless jobs because they're the person in the middle who has to deliver the bad news. The issue is one of resources. I mean, it all boils down to resources because I've had many clients who I represent who have an attitude about the Department of Children and Families that's classically based on demographics and the culture from which they live. The class issue is the elephant in the room. And people who are don't have a lot of resources feel that there's a giant us against them situation where a person comes into their life from the client's point of view. It's an ivory tower situation. Decisions are made about their lives. They lose control of the most sacred thing in their lives, their family. And, you know, as a defense attorney, as their advocate, I am even on the side that represents to them the other, the people who are not really there to advocate for their interests. And I think the biggest problem is that there aren't the resources to make those, and the there isn't the consciousness raised situation where a client knows that they can go all the way to the commissioner. And I guess I have to question, would the commissioner really be able to field the number of calls that my clients would feel like they need to make?
Well, Lori, let's put that to commissioner. What about that? I mean, certainly you can't need people in these situations are often, I mean, these are not good situations to begin with.
Absolutely right. And it depends, of course, on the situation. If the issue, some of these issues are really need to be directly addressed in the court process. They're not something that the social worker or my office has control over. But again, what I'm encouraging people to do is talk with their social worker first if they have issues or concerns, but then to the district directors. By and large, most people work through their issues. These are challenging cases, but I think that we want to make sure that they have avenues to raise issues and concerns. But I also want to talk about the caller's concern about resources because I think that's real. I totally appreciate the fact that we don't have enough resources to address all the issues we want to. We certainly have made some efforts. I think the governor has certainly taken the initiative to identify substance abuse, particularly opiate abuse, as a major issue. We've put resources, new resources into identification and treatment, but we have more to do. We don't have enough resources in that area. In terms of social worker staff, we don't have enough resources now. We, again, with the governor's support, we did add new social workers over the last year. Our caseloads keep rising, though, and that makes it even more challenging for social workers to appropriately handle the cases that they have and to provide appropriate attention to the children and families that they're serving. So we need to keep focusing on those issues to try to turn that curve, both in terms of prevention issues, to try to avoid some of these problems in the first place, but then to have enough resources to provide appropriate services.
Ginny's calling in from St. Johnsbury. Let's go to you now, Ginny.
Yes, a couple of points. My daughter is a social worker, has been very dedicated for 20 years, loved her work. 4 or 5 years ago, she had contact with her client at Christmas time and from then on could not make contact. So her supervisor let her go into a public place to make contact. She was very badly beaten.
Your daughter was, Ginny.
Yes, very badly. Hospitalized, out of work for 6 or 7 months, still has post-traumatic stress syndrome, cannot ride the subway because of the fear. It was so bad that the director of Homeland Security in Boston ordered around-the-clock protection for her. Now, they have 26, 27 caseloads. They're only supposed to have 12 or 15, but the budgets always get cut. Not, well, I can't say always, but most of the time for these social services. So she makes a point now of seeing her clients at least once a month. So, but it's horrendous, and they always, you know, cut the budgets and give them caseloads. And then when they go to court, Many, many times the judges will turn that child back to the parent, and pretty soon it's deja vu all over again. So that's my comment.
Ginny, I'm very sorry to hear about your daughter. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Ginny says her daughter was beaten while working as a caseworker in Massachusetts. We're talking today about what happened over the weekend in Vermont. We're sharing thoughts, concerns, questions. Our guest this hour is Ken Schatz. He's the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. And on the line with us now is Angelo McLean. He's the CEO of NASW. That's the National Association of Social Workers. He was also commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Children and Families before this job, and that NASW has an extensive set of guidelines related to safety in the workplace for social workers. Angelo McLean, thanks for being on the program today.
Hello, it's good to join you.
So, as I said, you do have an extensive set of guidelines for social workers about safety in the workplace, and this is not specifically related to state workers dealing only with child welfare, but more generally speaking. Should there be a national protocol for safety that all state workers around the country have in situations like this?
Yes, we do think there should be a national Social Worker Safety Act. We actually, in Massachusetts in 2013, we were able to pass a Social Worker Safety Act in Massachusetts, and we think that national Social Worker Safety Act should be modeled after the Massachusetts Act. And first and foremost, it really provides for making safety for social workers a priority, and really building within organizations, whether it's private or government organizations, a culture of safety. And there's a number of steps that go with that.
And so what are they? Give us a few things that you think should be done.
One thing is looking to promote safety, having a safety committee within each of your area or district offices, having a safety committee at the state level, and that committee being charged with developing a policy, developing training, and developing protocols. And part of their goal is to continuously look for ways to improve safety for social workers, you know, making use of technology, you know, cameras, having panic buttons to improve safety, looking at things, having social workers have mobile phones while they're in the field, having police detail in offices when there are supervised visits. When you know there's, you know, like for instance, Massachusetts, what we did, we had a day a week in each area office where we would have police detail, and in that way, if you had some families who potentially were tended to be toward violence, you had some police presence there to help. Having two workers go out on home visits while they're in the field, looking at the parking lots for safety in terms of, you know, sometimes it'd be something as simple as making sure all the lights, the parking lights are on, having, you know, buddy systems for people going out to the cars, and then taking threats seriously, you know, putting in place a reporting system so you actually can track the number of verbal threats, physical threats, assaults, and so forth, so that data can inform opportunities to make improvement, to have training, safety training for social workers, and then to have that filter into the schools of social work, so students are getting trained and really conscious about safety as they're, you know, getting prepared to come into the profession.
You, as I said, were the head of the Massachusetts Department of Children and Families, and you were a caseworker yourself for 10 years. How common are threats to caseworkers, and how dangerous a job do you think it is?
There is a lot of danger in the job, but the job is most of the families we work with, we're able to engage with them. They understand that the social worker is there to help them and not to judge them. And so for the most part, most families, you can kind of work through that. I would say that anyone who's worked in the field for any length of time will have stories that they can tell of when they were threatened, either verbally or physically. But really, the training, one of the things the training helps with is how to engage people in a way to kind of diffuse some of that natural anger and tension that's going to be there. And then I did see in the an article this morning where one of the workers that had worked with Laura was talking to one of the families that worked with her. The mother was talking about how she felt like she was really there to help her. And as you have those skills, then the families can see that you're trying to help and not judge them and put them down.
That's Angelo McLean. He's the CEO of the National Association of Social Workers and a former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Children and Families. Angelo, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Ken Schatz, commissioner with the Vermont Department for Children and Families, what kind of safety protocol is in place for caseworkers and social workers at DCF who might feel threatened?
We do provide training and guidance for social workers in terms of how to maintain safety and do some of the things that Mr. McLean just described. Occasionally, when we're going on home visits, two social workers go together. Occasionally, we will ask law enforcement to accompany social workers when we think there's a risk. Frankly, even before this incident, our management and staff were reviewing our safety procedures and protocols. Obviously, this tragedy sort of renews our commitment to review all of those to make sure that we have appropriate safety protocols in place consistent with best practice. I look forward, if our staff hasn't already connected with NASW, I look forward to doing that. As again, Mr. McLean indicated, it's just heartbreaking that I didn't know Lara Sobel, but everything I've heard about her indicates she was the kind of social worker who was incredibly beloved, incredibly respectful of the families that she worked with, and she had an incredibly good reputation of being dedicated and committed. And so for this tragedy to occur is just really heartbreaking.
That's Ken Schatz. He's the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. We're talking over the events of this weekend today. We're hearing from many of you with your thoughts, your concerns. You can continue to share them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can tell us what you'd like to hear in the coming days and weeks, what concerns you have, what follow-up questions you want answered. And we will, coming up right now, talk about what's been published now in the affidavit as related to Jody Herring, who's being arraigned this afternoon for the murder of Lara Sobel. If you have a question, again, 1-800-639-2211. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition, and today we're talking about the murder of Lara Sobel. We're talking about the suspect in that killing, Jody Herring, who's also suspected in the slaying of three other people, relatives of hers. And our guest today, Ken Schatz, is the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Lara Sobel was a DCF worker who was involved in Jody Herring's case, where Jody Herring had lost custody of her 9-year-old daughter. Just late this morning, the affidavit in this case was released, and we're going to go now to Pete Hirsch, VPR's reporter who's been reading the affidavit and can give us an update. Hi, Pete. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Jane.
So I'd like to know, first of all, what the affidavit reveals about the sequence of events on Friday in the murder of Lara Sobel.
Well, it paints just a really chilling scene of how things unfolded last Friday. From the point when Jody Herring arrived in a vehicle, emerged from that car carrying a hunting rifle, and approached Lara Sobel in the parking lot of the state office complex where she works and shot her twice. It also talks about the scene that immediately unfolded after that, where Washington County State's Attorney Scott Williams, who happened to be working out in a gym inside that building, came outside to see what had gone on, actually wrested the firearm from Jody Herring, and with the help of bystanders, constrained her and subdued her until police arrived.
Peter, this affidavit also reveals something about Jody Herring's demeanor during and after the killing.
Yeah, calm, like it was no big deal is how they described it. They said Jody Herring was laughing not only at the scene of the crime, but during her transport a few miles away to Berry City Police Department, the time during which police were interviewing her about what she'd done, and they said that she was, quote, laughing, making small talk about the incident like it was no big deal.
That's VPR's Peter Hirschfeld revealing a few of the details that have just been released in the affidavit related to the case. Pete Hirschfeld, thanks very much for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks, Jen.
VPR has more coverage online on Twitter and on our webpage. We'll also have more coverage ongoing as events unfold today and on into the week. We're talking with Ken Schatz. He's commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Many of you also wanting to weigh in today. Ellen Maloney is a retired Superior Court judge. She's on the phone with us now. Hi, Ellen. Your thoughts?
Hi. It's a complex area, and you've been handling it very well. I wanted to address just one aspect, and that is the governor's mention of the toxicity of the way that social workers are addressed or treated in our society. And it's I want to say in particular that one of the biggest problems is that no one can talk back who has any knowledge of the case. There is no way to respond to incorrect or fantasy-type responses that people, a parent or someone in the community, can make with impunity. And yet you as the judge or you as the social worker are unable to respond because of ethical constraints and the confidentiality that surrounds juvenile matters. It makes for a one-sided story in the public, and I think the public really needs to be aware that they're very often hearing, well, pretty much always hearing, a one-sided picture when they get these kind of complaints and criticisms. And the criticisms go unanswered because of the ethical concerns. I could give examples, but I'm constrained from doing it by confidentiality concerns. That's all, really.
Yeah, thank you for that comment, Ellen. I appreciate it. Let's go to Commissioner Schatz for your response. I mean, Ellen is saying, you know, you've been saying, and the governor has been saying, we need to change the tenor of the conversation around how workers are treated and give them more respect. Ellen Maloney, a retired Superior Court judge, saying that's difficult to do, at least for people who are actively involved in the system.
It is a challenge. Vermont's child protection laws do make those proceedings confidential. The reason for that is to protect the child. We want to enable the child to avoid stigma or negative comments as the child grows up. So we keep these proceedings confidential, meaning that people can't talk about the details. Judge Maloney is correct. It creates then a difficult situation when there are comments about specific cases. We are simply unable to respond to those because the law sets out that confidentiality provision. Certainly what we need to be thinking and talking about more as we go forward, and certainly we've been trying to do this, is in a more general way taking away the confidentiality of individual cases. Can we talk more about what social workers do, what the system's intent is, the purpose, the value of this process to enable people to understand the child protection system more completely and understand that what we're doing is taking action only in those circumstances when there's actually allegations of abuse or neglect, where there is, in fact, evidence that abuse and neglect has occurred, and even then that we're very careful to when it is safe for the child. We want to enable the family to stay together, but when the child's safety is at risk, that's when the time would come for us to recommend that the child go into foster care situation. And even then, there are these procedural safeguards so that it's not just the decision of the social worker. Ultimately, a judge will be involved in a fair process. But again, the reality is we can't talk about what happens in that courtroom. And so, yes, that is a challenge for us in this conversation.
We got a note from Sean, who posts online, saying it seems unlikely that an intelligent conversation with those writing the terrible comments will take place. Sean says, my guess is that these are people who have direct first-person experience with DCF. To condone such violent actions against a group of state employees cannot go overlooked. While I don't have any direct experience with DCF, I can't imagine they operate under a take kids first, ask questions later policy. You know, Ellen Maloney was saying a moment ago that it's hard to hear from actual DCF workers who are involved in cases because of privacy issues. Reporter Elodie Reed with the St. Albans Messenger did talk to some DCF workers about how they feel about safety concerns and why there might be some questions about fear on the increase or safety concerns being on the increase. Her article, Are They Safe?, was published on July 18th in the St. Albans Messenger, and she joins us now. Elodie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So who did you talk to, and what did they tell you about their concerns for their safety?
Sure. Well, I started out by talking to St. Albans District Director Alex Gibson, and she initially came to me, actually, about her concerns for her social workers. And so working with her, I spoke with a couple caseworkers, Skylar Bryan and Melanie Hall. And Skylar Bryan works with the sort of non-court involved cases. So she's going to people's homes, but there's no court process involved. And Melanie Hall is working with the Child Protection Services. So she's generally working with younger children.
And they told you that they're seeing more of a concern because of drug use among families.
Right. Yeah. Alex Gibson in our discussion was relaying to me that over the past 4 years, they've seen a tremendous increase in caseloads. She gave me the numbers. The investigations and assessments alone went up from 453 to 700 in those 4 years. And of their caseload in June, they had 273 families they were working with. And 200 of those families had substance abuse involved in the case. And of those 200, 140 were involved in opiate addiction. And Alex was saying that because of the nature of drugs and substance abuse, there's less predictability, there's more safety concerns for the child, and ultimately more safety concerns for the workers as they go in and are investigating not only a child's safety, but whether people are complying with treatment, whether they're relapsing, what they are telling caseworkers if it's true or not. So there's all sorts of components that caseworkers are sort of addressing specifically in these substance abuse cases.
And Elodie, what did they tell you that they do if they do have concerns for their safety?
Sure. Are you talking about for the child's safety?
No, for the DCF workers' safety. If they're concerned going into a situation, what resources did they have to make sure that they feel more secure?
Sure. Well, to be blunt, they really don't have that many resources. I was shown this massive whiteboard that's in their office, and it's a sign-in, sign-out board, and you know all the caseworkers' names are on it, and there's a spot for them to write where they go and what time. But it's pretty vague, and caseworkers often are going out, especially up here in Franklin County, to these rural homes where their cell phones often don't work, and that's basically all they have. They, as Commissioner Schatz said earlier, they do often go in pairs for cases they may have concerns about. One of the caseworkers, Skylar Bryan, told me that she often checks Department of Corrections records for her clients that she may be concerned about. But the biggest concern that was relayed to me anyway was there's just a lack of knowing what they're getting into when they're going to these homes, especially if it's a first-time visit.
That's Elodie Reed. She's a staff writer with the St. Albans Messenger. We have a link to her article called Are They Safe? Looking at Safety Concerns that DCF Workers Have in Her Area. We have it up at vpr.net. Elodie, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Commissioner Schatz, what do you think about when you hear, you know, Elodie Reed was talking with two DCF workers in the St. Albans area who say they have more concerns, drug use is a big concern, just lots of questions when they go out on these field calls?
No question that when social workers are in that kind of situation, they need to be mindful of their own safety. And we definitely are reviewing all those safety procedures and protocols. Some of that review started, frankly, before this article that was mentioned, but is continuing. We need to carefully look at making sure that we provide appropriate guidance to social workers so that they can know which are the kind of situations where they need to receive more support. And then the resource issues we've talked about a little bit already too, but it's not new. Substance abuse is definitely an ongoing challenge, and we're continuing to address it, and we need to continue providing appropriate resources for both our social workers, but also for our families who need more support.
Commissioner Schatz, we're just about out of time this hour, but I want to make sure that it doesn't get lost in this conversation that Lara Sobel seemed to be a person who was loved by many. What can you tell us as we wrap up this conversation about who she was?
You know, I didn't know her myself, but my heart really goes out to her family. This is a heartbreaking loss. Everything I've learned about her, as you indicated, is that she was an incredibly dedicated and committed social worker who really treated every family she worked with tremendous respect. We've heard stories from people who she's served as the family members and also foster parents about how respectful and supported she was in every interaction. So she clearly was a wonderful person, and this just is a terrible tragedy.
That's Ken Schatz. He's the commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Commissioner Schatz, thank you very much for making time for us today.
Thank you.
We will continue to update you on this situation, what is known about the four victims that were murdered over the weekend. And as the case develops, we will tell you what's happening. You can go to vpr.net for more coverage. We'll have more coverage throughout the hours and the days that follow. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.